This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's nice to take a load off those aching feet and sit down, but sitting may just give you an aching back. Lots of chairs aren't well designed, and they force us to sit in slumping postures that will eventually get us in trouble. My guest, Galen Kranz, is the author of the new book, The Chair. She's a professor at the University of California at Berkeley, specializing in the sociology of architecture. She's also a longtime student of the Alexander Technique, a system of posture and movement that is often part of the course of study for actors and musicians. I asked Kranz why she wanted to examine chairs.
Well, there's a personal component to this, and that is that I actually have my own serious back problems, and that's what brought me to the Alexander Technique in the first place. And then I began to feel that I wanted to train to become a teacher, but that was a huge commitment of time. And so then I got pragmatic, and I was trying to think of a topic where the body and the environment come together, and I could think there's of tools, clothes, and then furniture, but furniture is clearly more architectural. And then the chair is the quintessential piece of furniture. It's anthropomorphic. It's got arms and back and a seat and legs. And moreover, every architect of the 20th century, or almost every architect, has tried his or her hand at designing one. So it was a topic that I knew would be a good bridge between the world of environmental design and body consciousness.
Now, you point out in your book that we may feel that a chair is very comfortable, even though it's actually hurting us.
That's right.
I think I learned that one the hard way. I guess one example would be that overstuffed easy chair.
Right.
It always seemed so appealing. What is basically not very good about one of those big overstuffed easy chairs?
Well, the problem with the easy chair is that your flesh takes on a load-bearing function for which it's not designed. Weight should be transferred down through the bones. When you compress flesh and give it this inappropriate weight-bearing function, you compress all the small capillaries, and that means that you're not taking nutrients to the cells and you're not getting waste matter away from the cells appropriately. And so you get tired in the long run. It's fatiguing to have toxins build up in the flesh. That's why airplanes are tiring. That's one of the many reasons they're tiring. And the soft chairs, in the end, become very fatiguing. And so I end up promoting a much firmer, flatter kind of surface. And incidentally, going back to a much older definition of comfort, instead of ease, I like to hearken back to the original Latin meaning of the term, which was to strengthen, as to strengthen someone in time of distress.
Now, before we talk more about chairs, I'd like you to talk about why you think sitting isn't really all that great in the first place.
Well, there are particular things about sitting that are problematic, and then there are the general idea of holding any position for any length of time. Any position held for a length of time is difficult because, as a species, I don't think we're designed for stasis. We have ball and socket joints. We don't have any flat places where we line up and can just quit working, except when we're lying down, of course. So chair sitting has become problematic because we sit so long in chairs in our lives, and we have so many chairs to choose from cars to dining room tables to work to entertainment, so forth and so on. But in particular, then, this posture, the classical right-angle seated posture, is problematic because when the legs are at a 90-degree relation to the spine, the muscles behind the thighs that wrap around and tuck into the pelvis at the back pull the pelvis backwards, and that flattens the lumbar curve. And when you flatten that curve, you've distorted the elongated S shape of the spine, which makes it easy for us to sit upright. Like if you imagine a C and you put weight on the top of the C.
A letter C.
Yeah, the letter C.
Mm-hmm.
And you put weight on that, it collapses pretty easily. But if you imagine an S, the letter S, and put a weight on top of that, it's harder to collapse. So we need that elongated S. The chair flattens and takes away that lower curve. So that's its major detriment. But there are a whole lot of other problems that are associated with chair sitting.
Just so we could all envision this, when you're talking about the S shape of the spine, where is the top of the S? Where's the bottom of the S?
Well, the neck would be the very top of the S, and then you come down through the middle of the back, and there's a curve, and then there's an inner curve coming forward to the small of the back, and then the sacrum and the tailbone come back again. So there's this set of double curves in the spine.
And you lose that when you just slump over in a chair.
That's right. And chairs pretty much encourage you to slump. And then, see, the ergonomics people come in and say, okay, we don't want them to do that, so we'll force their lower back forward by having lumbar support. And that's their big claim to fame. But the fact of the matter is that the stress is still there muscularly pulling the lower back back and flattening that curve. So it's much more efficient to simply drop the knees substantially lower than the hip sockets. And then the work of sitting upright is distributed more evenly on the front and back of the spine and the top and bottom of the spine, and the lumbar curve is retained naturally. And that's, I call that the perch position, halfway between sitting and standing.
Now, the lumbar curve is that curve right above your behind.
Right. Okay. The place where it dips in. You want that.
Where do you think the back support on the back of a chair should be?
Well, here's where I'm kind of radical. I think we don't really need back support if we sit high enough, well, more than 18 inches, so that with our feet still flat on the ground. And that what that does is it gives you this, puts the thighs at an oblique relationship to the spine instead of 90 degrees. And when you've got that, which I call a perch, you actually want to sit higher than the standard 18 inches. But the virtue of that is then your pelvis is appropriately rolled forward, the lumbar curve is preserved, and you don't need back support because it's easy to sit upright. And the fact is that when we do forward-oriented tasks like writing and typing and keyboarding and reading and eating, we don't lean back and we shouldn't lean back. So the chair back is actually this great myth that's been created, but if we just would go to a perch position, we don't even need chair backs except for real lounges, and that's another story.
How often do you sit in a perch position?
Almost all the time. I eat exclusively in that position, and for years I didn't know why in my kitchen island I wanted to take all my meals there. And I never wanted to sit at the dining room table. And finally, when I sorted out all this physiology, I realized why I'd felt so much more comfortable at my island. So I perch all the time.
Now, a lot of ergonomic chairs have armrests on them. I have a very ambivalent relationship with armrests. I like to lean on them, but I realize when I'm leaning on them, I'm usually like tilting off to one side and putting much more stress on one side of the body than the other, and certainly not sitting up straight. So what's your impression of armrests?
Well, I understand for people who do a lot of data inputting and where their arms are held in the same position all the time that they can be useful. But my earliest readings about armrest research said that really they only transfer about 4% of the weight down to the ground. And so they're not really all that useful. I've also heard them defended on the grounds that they're useful for weaker or older people to haul themselves up or push themselves up. But personally, I'd rather people invest in learning how to strengthen their torsos and their bodies rather than relying so exclusively on the chair. Because the more we use these supports, whether it's the chair back or the armrest, the weaker we get, and then the more we need the support, and that makes us weak. The more we use the support, the weaker our musculature becomes. And so it's a vicious cycle. And I'd like to stop it and encourage people to view sitting as somewhat more athletic or certainly a more conscious activity.
My guest is Galen Kranz, author of the new book, The Chair. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Galen Kranz, author of The Chair. A few years ago, those kneeling chairs seemed to be very popular, and these were chairs Why don't you describe them?
Well, the kneeling chair was invented about 30 years ago by some Norwegians who wanted to take advantage of this the new physiological research that demonstrated that it's much less stressful to the back to stand or sit in this perch position, or the 135-degree relationship between the thigh and the spine. So they said, okay, how can we take advantage of this? We'll design this. I'll have this forward slope on the seat that rotates the pelvis forward and creates this beneficial relationship. But and this chair has been called the most radical chair of the 20th century, with good reason, because it doesn't even have a chair back. But it's still called a chair. But here's the conservative part. They recognized what you pointed out, that if you're going to perch, you have to change the height of everything. And so they wanted to figure out how to lower height of the seated person so that you can still use the standard tables and desks. And so they bent the leg in order to lower the body in space and have you rest on your knee. And the problem with that, though, is that a lot of people experience difficulties with pressure on the knee, and the feet are not flat on the floor any longer, so you lose the proprioceptive feedback from the soles of the feet. So I think that they're interesting. They were a move in the right direction. Unfortunately, in this country, the Taiwanese knockoffs that were very, very cheap used a flat runner instead of a rounded runner on the bottom. So they become very static. You don't get movement and rocking in the pelvis that you do in the original Norwegian ones. But the Norwegian ones cost $250 or $240, and the knockoffs were $40. So the knockoffs really knocked the good Norwegian ones out of our market entirely. So we really don't have very much experience with the good ones.
Since chairs usually come one size fits all and many of us don't fit that size, what are some of the things we can carry around with us so that we can quickly customize whatever chair we land in?
Well, sometimes carrying a book around is useful because you can put it in the seat to raise yourself up so that you can get to a perch position if you want, or you can use the same book on the floor as a footstool if you're trying to sit in the right ankle way. I carry around a backboard that my Alexander teacher designed, and I use that on airplanes, especially to take the swale out of those seats. And I use them in railroads, and also I take them to movie theaters to take the excess swale out of those seats. So you can buy a backboard and carry it around with you. But so far, I haven't found a really neat one that folds in half and it becomes as small as a book. So sometimes I think a book is handier.
Mm-hmm.
Wrapped often in a towel or something. But just a paperback book has got about the right softness for me usually.
Now, if you're sitting in a perch position, which means you're sitting higher up than mm-hmm. your average chair would place you, how have you raised things on your desk? Did you have a different desk built, or have you just, like, raised things up?
I just raised everything up. The secret of my success is that I take that perch position and rotate it horizontally, and guess what that looks like? A lounge chair. And I actually do all my computing from a lounge chair.
Lying on your back?
Not semi-supine. I mean, a lounge chair. It's if you take that perch position and rotate it horizontally, you see your head is still up and your knees are up. Can you imagine that without the benefit of graphics?
Yeah.
If you just you take your hands and make your kind of a perch look, and then rotate that in space, you get a lounge chair. It's just a kind of neat coincidence that this open thigh to spine relationship in zero gravity in outer space, the NASA people call this position the neutral body posture, because that's what happens when there's no stress on your body at all. That's the shape it goes into. And interestingly enough, in the martial arts, that's called the horse, because it gives you stability and ability to move in any direction. And in the Alexander technique, it's called the position of mechanical advantage. Well, you take that position on the vertical and then rotate it to the horizontal, and boom, it's a lounge chair with that same open relationship between the thigh and the spine. So why not work in that position? So I do, with my computer on a monitor so that it swings around in front of me to the right eye level.
Now, you teach. So your students are expected to sit there during your lectures, which are how long?
They vary from an hour, you know, the 50-minute hour to an hour and a half.
That's a long time to sit. So do you give your students breaks to get up and move?
Yes, and I give them permission to lie on the floor, too. And that caused some controversy in my department because I teach in a large auditorium for my large lecture class anyway. And the seats are movable, and so I propose to my students after I give them the introductory lecture on chairs that they could have the option of sitting on the floor if they stack up some of the chairs and get them out of the way, and they can be on the carpet. And they like that, and some of them choose that option. But the professors who come in afterwards get upset because they don't want their students sitting on the floor because they think that's a sign of disrespect or not paying attention.
You said you give your permission students to lie down.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, if they want to lie down to watch slides or if they want to lie down to listen, that's fine with me. They can take notes. They can sit up and take notes. They can lie down when there's nothing to take notes on. I mean, they should have the choice as to how they use their bodies to learn. We now know, in fact, that learning in the brain is very closely allied with movement. So we actually need, the unspoken curriculum of grade school, the first thing you learn when you go to kindergarten is how to sit still in a chair. And I think we need to rethink education so that we figure out how to teach subject matter in relation to movement. We actually need to rethink our whole curriculum and the way we teach. And so I'm trying to practice that in my own university.
I would like you to choose the chair in the public part of your life that is the bane of your existence.
Oh, probably those plastic molded chairs.
Those fiberglass ones?
Yes.
From the 50s and 60s?
Yes. I think those for me are probably the worst because they assume only one kind of body. And if you have any deviation from that little pear shape that they've molded in there, you're miserable. And they don't give you planes on which to open your rib cage against. Or, you see, flat surfaces are actually better for you than the so-called organic curvy ones because the flat surface gives your rib cage something to open out against, or your pelvic wings, your sit bones actually want to open out against a firm surface so that your pelvis, your hips, those wings, those bones at the side, so that they open and the whole pelvic basin becomes larger. You want to become larger internally because you want more room for your organs. We in the West don't think much about organ health. In Chinese medical theory, organ health is actually primary. And it is important that we don't sit in a collapsed bag and compress our organs. And that's one of the other bad things about chairs, is that when we do collapse and lean back and slump and so forth, we're not doing the lungs, the heart, the stomach, the guts, and all those other organs any favor. We're constricting their circulation.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Galen Kranz is the author of The Chair. She's a professor of architecture at the University of California at Berkeley. This is Fresh Air.